Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I remember talking to my younger sister, Rachel, and she was saying one of the things she struggled with is when, you know, you're having a conversation like this and somebody says, so tell me about your family. How many brothers and sisters do you have? And I went, oh, that's a tough one. And Rachel was saying, I just say now I have a brother. She said, it's too hard to say, you know, I have a brother and a sister. And even for myself, like for a long time, I'd say, I have two sisters, but then, yeah, then it just gets hard. So what do your sisters do? Where are they? Are they married?
Yeah.
So I actually generally steer clear of it now.
I won't sugarcoat it. This episode may be tough to get through.
So I'm Dave O'Keefe, and my sister Julie, my younger sister, died in Childers.
I'm Deirdre O'Keefe. I'm Dave's wife, and Julie was my sister-in-law. Yes, and she perished in Childers on the 23rd of June 2000.
So I was going to say, although we were just boyfriend and girlfriend at the time.
We were a very new boyfriend and girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
It's raw and heartfelt. We had a few laughs. We shed plenty of tears, but mostly over a few hours one afternoon, engaged in a beautiful reflection on a life that was taken too soon.
I remember she was so sensible and diligent. She was in one place you'd think you'd be safe. You know, asleep in bed, not carousing across the road in the pub or doing something else. She was somewhere where you should be safe. And it just wasn't. My mum said to me once, it should have been you. And I remember being taken aback by it.
But it wasn't in a bad way. It was more just because Dave was the daredevil. He was the one on the motorcycle. He was the one that got the tattoo. Like, he was the one that was just out there. And poor Judy was the sensible girl. She stayed at home, helped them move. She organised everything for mum and dad. And, yeah, like, on paper, it wasn't really...
You're
higher the risk.
I was the high-risk one.
We didn't want you to go.
Thank you. And I suppose that was another thing, just the unfairness of her being chosen and not, say, somebody like me. That did play on my mind a lot.
Tell me about Julie. Who was she?
I have to say, as brother and sister, we fought like cat and dog. Oh, God. We were... Because we were so close in age and there was always sort of competition between us. I was always just ahead, but she was always snapping at my heels. That driving lessons, first to get their driver's license, which she did. She got there before me. It just a lot of competition. But I have to say, once we left home, like we started getting on a lot better because we were sort of found our own paths, our own lives, and we were starting to have a much more cordial relationship. Yeah. And actually, you've just reminded me of something else. This is before we came out. I went home to tell him I was going to come out to Australia. And I remember Julie was there. And I said, Mum, Dad, I've got something to say. And she said, oh, okay, what's that? I'm going to go to Australia for a year. And they were really super surprised.
Yeah.
And Julie says, I've just told them that. That I'm going. So back to the competition. And my mum's going, what? You're both going? What is going on with you people? So she'd managed to get in there before me and tell my folks that she was going to Australia. That's and right. then I come along and I think yeah. I have the most amazing news, like groundbreaking. And I wasn't surprised. They were just confused. Going, what's wrong with you people? Mm. Anyway.
Oh, that's great.
Nonetheless, Dave and Dee arrive in Australia first. They get to Sydney in November 1999. Julie follows just after New Year. It's a bit of a financial struggle, but things are going as well as they can be. And for the first time in his life, Dave feels like there's money in the bank. He decides to pay for flights for his parents to fly out from Limerick in Ireland.
I just wanted to repay my folks
yeah.
and do something nice for them. Mm. So
we brought them out for the month.
Yes.
But Julie had already been here. So she was working like as temping. So she was doing reception and secretarial, like admin kind of work. Yeah, no, she wasn't. That's how she met Claire. Because I think Claire, I'm not sure if they were living in Coogee, whether they met that way or whether she met one of them at work. And then they all realised they were in the same area and then because they got the apartment together.
Claire is Claire Webb. She was 24 from just outside of London. She met Julie and fellow Brit Melissa Smith in Sydney. In March 2000, they met the O'Keefe family for dinner at the Coogee Bay Hotel.
They came in later and joined us.
Yeah, they were so, yeah, they were just happy.
Yeah,
yeah, the three girls, they were so excited to go away.
Yeah,
they were looking forward to getting out of Sydney and just going and exploring. Because like they were all young, 20s, they just wanted to have fun. It's like we were the boring old buddy daddies that were like a year older than them.
Yeah,
like,
you
I was actually younger than Julie, so. Yeah,
you and me, and because I remember my folks, like my mum and dad were like were really interested in, was really drawn to their excitement and, you know, the sort of vibrancy.
Yes, they were so excited.
They were so excited about going. And it sounded like such an adventure.
Yeah,
And both my folks were quite adventurous when they were younger because they went off to Russia back in the early 70s when it wasn't really something you did.
Yeah.
They did quite a bit of travelling around themselves. So I think they were just drawn to what the girls were up to.
Mm. And as a group, as the three of them, those three girls.
Really happy. It was like as if they'd known each other forever. Like they didn't, but they did. Like they were like three sisters and just, there was a lot of good-natured banter going on between
them. I
think
she sort of, do you know that phrase, I found my tribe?
Yeah.
I think Julie had found hers.
Yeah.
Any recollections of when she said, hey, I'm going to go up to Dr. Queensland? Any recollections of that?
They were talking about Sydney was expensive. I remember them saying Sydney was expensive and they wanted to tour. So their idea was the cheapest way to tour was to do it on the bus, get that hop on, hop off thing. So I remember that's what they decided to do. And it was the debate whether to go north or south. So there was no like, I want to go to Queensland. I was like, well, which is the easiest? And because it was coming into winter, that's right, that's why they went north.
The weather was the deciding factor. Even for the English and Irish, a winter in Queensland is far more palatable than the cold of Victoria. So the next day, they boarded a bus and headed for the Sunshine State.
It was the postcard that we received on 15th of June that was sent, and that describes her being in Brisbane, not really much happening here, we're going to head north, and she actually says she's going to head to Childers.
Did she say it on the card?
Yeah, it says it on the card.
Ah, okay. That just shows her level of organisation.
They knew where they were going to stop.
Yeah, the amount of trips that I went on where I couldn't even tell you where we were going to stop.
So they'd been there about a week. Julie was working on a tomato farm with Kate Morris, who we heard from in episode 3. Now, as you've also heard, the fire happens just after midnight on what is Thursday night, early Friday morning. Dave and Dee are 1,200 kilometres away in Sydney. They don't own a television and they haven't tuned in to any news broadcasts. Friday goes by and they head out for the night.
I was doing ballroom dancing, so we had a show. So we were actually in a hotel in Sydney and we were at a big function. And the one mobile phone we had between the two of us was up in the room. So when the function was over and we came back upstairs, Dave looked at the phone and there were 17 missed calls. And the first thing you think of is like, something's happened at home.
And they're all international.
They're all international calls. And we thought, oh, shh. Yeah. So something major has happened. So we just, we left, we didn't even stay. We left the hotel, we checked out and said, okay, we need to get home.
Yeah, and we phoned and I spoke to, and it was one of my cousins that had been phoning. So I called him back and he said, look, you need to call home. So I phoned my mum and she was beside herself. And at that time, there was so little information, like how many hostels are there in Childers? Yeah. Is she actually there? Because we knew she was going to move on. Had she left that day, or was she going to leave tomorrow? Like, there was just no information, no easy way to find out. So that's how I found out. And as a person, like as the sort of human nature is, she'll be one of the survivors.
Yes, yeah.
She wasn't even there. The odds are she's okay.
One of the reasons why we were, like, her mum was contacted was because her passport was found, but they couldn't locate her. And yeah, that's how we were kind of one of the bunches that were contacted. But then it was like,
as time went on, you just realise that the chances of her popping up somewhere are
getting more and more remote.
Early on, there was sort of these are the people who lost their lives, but the other side of the equation is you guys sort of.
We were still holding out hope, absolutely, yeah.
And this is the thing, right? Because we were down in Sydney, we were so remote from it. Mm. You're sort of disconnected from it.
Yeah.
You telling the stories about the fire truck and some of the survivor stories about the intensity of that fire. Mm. Like, those people go, no, absolutely. There was nobody else coming out.
Yeah.
Down here in Sydney, you just...
Maybe there's hope.
Maybe we missed something. Maybe something happened. Just that remoteness. The impact. Like, even you've been there so close to when it happened, you could see, and you look at the remains of the hostel and you go, yeah, that's nobody's going to stay in there and survive.
Yeah. But then, like, early on, like in the piece as well, the Irish papers were reporting that Julie was part of it as well. So within a couple of days of the story obviously being released, it was all over Ireland as well. So it was kind of that thing where I think Eileen wanted to get out of it. Just, it was everywhere. So it was kind of nice. And they did say that when they stayed with us for the month in Sydney, that it was just nice to kind of be somewhere where they didn't know anyone. There's no one knocking on the door kind of saying, how are you? Maybe they would have liked that, I don't know. But it was just, your mum just didn't want anyone around. So it kind of worked to be like the fact that we were just that one step removed from it at the time.
Nobody wants to see the papers saying your daughter's dead.
She didn't.
That's the last thing she wanted to hear. Like, denial.
I don't think you want to believe it.
Yeah.
At what point do you guys sort of, and your family go, okay, we know.
Mm-hmm. That's a re. You can apply a rational mind to it and say, well, after 24 or 48 hours, you know. But when you mix in a whole load of emotion, it doesn't matter how small, how absurd, how remote the possibility is that
the... But it was that thing of kind of keeping the family together as well.
Yeah. My mind sort of switched to, so what could you have done? Mm. Do you know that night, last night,
could we have stopped her?
Yeah, made a suggestion, go somewhere else.
Yeah, go south. It's not that cold in
Australia. Go south. Even just go to Bundaberg or Gladstone, like anywhere else. Stay an extra day or two in Brisbane. Like, yeah, you just start looking for ways you could have just
prevented it.
Just make a slightly different decision. Leave a day earlier. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, that was the bit that was sort of the toughest part.
Hard to do. It was over a month later, because there's a letter there. It's the middle of July before we actually got confirmed. But you kind of, like Dave was saying, the longer it goes on that she's not making contact with home, they think, okay, we're assuming that that she's...
And initially I thought, okay, I need to go up there. But I can't because there's nothing for me to do. Because
they did tell us not to because they hadn't confirmed.
Because it's not like I can confirm anything or do anything. It was just messed up, charred belongings. You weren't going to go in there and say, yeah, I can identify that rucksack. I can identify those possessions. And also, the first thing we started doing is just organising for my folks and my sister to come over. So we ended up staying.
We stayed in Sydney. We got them to come and stay with us.
Yeah, so they came out a few days later. And even my mum just was holding out hope till the very, very end. Mm-hmm. I have to say...
She did.
I think that the absolute finality was when we went to the funeral director and they handed out just a box, like a couple of square inches, and said,
yeah,
there you go, there's your daughter.
It's tough, mate.
Yeah. Like I say, the ability for you to just hang on to any kind of hope that something was missed. They're wandering around in the bush with concussion. Like, as absurd as it sounds, you say maybe something like that happened. But like I say, when we receive the remains, you just go, okay, that's it.
Given that it's a month before his confirmation, what is that emotion? Is it frustration? Is it? I know there's hope. Talked about the point. Is there frustration as well that it's taking so long?
The frustration was because we were dealing then with the federal police and they needed DNA confirmation. Oh. So that was really hard to speak to your mum to get that because she didn't believe that she was gone. So that was tough.
I remember the technician taking the swabs from my dad.
Yeah.
And
so things like that kind of confirmed it for us.
Just the expression on his face. Taking that sample just to match it to your daughter. Yeah, like you look so...
small. Oh. It's like as if his life was taken as well.
Yeah, so broken. Defeated.
Is that one of the toughest things, seeing what your mum and dad were going through?
Absolutely. Absolute. And I think having kids my own now, it's only deepened that understanding that, like, give birth to her, raise her from, like a baby to like, as you saw from the card, like, just coming up on her 25th birthday. And she'd stayed at home with him. She'd been such a big support to him. Myself and my younger sister, we buggered off doing other things, like, living in different parts of the country, but Julie was the home bird. She was their rock and support. But still, for all that effort as a parent, all that investment of love and hope, and they're an extension of you into the future. You hope they reflect your morals, your standards, the type of person you are, and just to see it just come to just an end so abruptly. My dad just looked so defeated, I have to say. It was tough.
Yeah, it's tough to see. Do you want to take a moment?
No, keep going.
As we've heard, it's more than a month before official confirmation of the worst news a parent or sibling could ever receive. The O'Keefe family head to Childers to see the palace for themselves.
So we all flew up to Brisbane once it was confirmed, and we got the tour. We were offered the tour of the hostel, so we didn't have to go.
But we did.
We did. Your mum and dad didn't go. Yeah, your mum just said point blank, no way, I can't do it. So we did it, and it was very confronting. It wasn't a nice thing to have to do, but afterwards you think, I'm glad I did that. Like, it was something that you think, okay, I'm kind of at peace with it now. I'm not going to be imagining what it was like. I have a physical view of it, I guess, to see the comfort and how people that didn't know our families were so upset by it, kind of made you feel like, oh, wow, like it's not just me. Like you actually feel it too. So it was a very much a community, like very warm. There was a very warm reception for everyone. We were all kind of welcomed into the community. And this is, we're so sorry that this happened in our town. Like it was very, it was a really nice.
There was pictures on the wall that were virtually untouched, like posters and stuff stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
But it was just an indicator of how intense the heat was, going straight, like straight up. Everything above, was it about head height, was
yes,
just black.
It was just black, yeah.
But below a certain amount, yeah. You could paint on the walls. So it just showed that the heat just went straight up. And the intensity of the fire was just on the upper floor. And like I say, it's like a waterline all the way around the ground floor.
Julie, Claire, and Melissa all died in room 7, where all 10 guests lost their lives.
There was numbers, that was how many people were found.
Oh, okay. It
was blue, like a light powder blue colour. But it was just, I remember it being underneath the windows, because underneath Julie's.
Oh, wow.
That's where the tomato plant was, though, and was sprouting a little tomato.
Tell me about the tomato plant.
It's just when we went in. And just over in the corner where there was still a little bit of floor where Julie was found, there was a tomato plant growing. And they were just saying like that was, because most of them in that room were on the tomato plantation or whatever you call it. And they were just saying like, it's just so, to see new life in such a devastating situation, just like shy of a month later was just, oof, yeah.
The bars on the windows, you stir up emotions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was looking at them and no human being would be able to get through. I just remember them being thick and really solid. Standing on the, I think on the service road part, you're going, okay, there's a fire. What could you even do? What could you do? Run a chain from a car to... No, there's nothing. I have to say, I don't know what the bars were there for. Yeah, like a small town, like jail bars. I just remember looking at them thinking, there's no way anybody without equipment could have done anything to get those bars off.
And did that amplify your initial anger?
Yes. It made me think, what was the purpose of them? But I don't know.
What chance did they have?
What chance did they have? But why were they there in the first place? Like, what purpose? So I'm just curious, what purpose did they serve? Yeah. What was... Did they need to be so thick? Did they need to be so, like, impenetrable? Yeah, I remember just standing there looking at the bars, the fireys, the survivors, any passers-by. There's nothing they could have done, which would have been awful.
How did you guys as a family say goodbye, Julie?
Like I was saying earlier, when you received her ashes, my mum was going, oh, what are we going to do with her? We can't, like, doesn't she need to go to a church or somewhere? Like, what else are we going to do with her? And I was saying, we'll take her back. We took her back to the hotel room and I think it was just put her on top of the TV. And I have to say, initially my mum was bit upset about it, but then she took great comfort from it because she was with us again. So after being separated for whatever it was, the month and a half, she was fine, like she was finally back with us. And pretty much until she got buried, she stayed with my mum. So we flew with her back down from Brisbane. She stayed with us in the house here in Sydney. And even when she went back to Ireland, she spent a couple of days at home with my mum before she was finally buried. My mum took great comfort from it, to the point where when my dad passed away in 2005, he was cremated and my mum brought him back and kept him at home for a little while before he got buried. So I think if people get the opportunity, I think they should bring their loved ones home.
How did you both go processing that, and how did your parents go with that news that it was deliberately there?
I think to start with, I was like really angry, and you know, looking for retribution, looking for revenge. But I have to say, it's something that didn't stay with me for very long. Yeah, that sort of passed because I sort of felt none of that was going to undo what was done. Nothing was gonna. Did I want to make this guy suffer, or did I want my sister back? I want my sister back. Is there anything I can do to this guy to bring her back? There isn't.
Not gonna let him defeat you as well.
Yeah. I think, on the other hand, though, my mum was like very, very, very angry. And she still is. She's still very, very angry. And every so often it just bubbles to the surface again. And it's as raw as it was 20 years ago.
She's got every right to be angry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. My father, on the other hand, I just felt he was never. He was a quiet man. That's a better way to describe him. He was a quiet man, and it was sort of hard to tell what was going on underneath the surface. But like I say, my mum was angry. He was more broken and defeated. All of us processed it and dealt with it in slightly different ways. So none of us were the same.
What is it about the fire that your family really struggled with?
I guess for me, like, what her last thoughts were. And those, like, when you explained about that girl just saying, like, this is it. Is that what she thought? I don't know. That's what I kind of... I couldn't imagine what she's thinking or what's going through her head or... Yeah, I think that's scary.
My heart certainly goes out to the O'Keefe family for the pain and suffering they've endured over the past 20 years. There was another moment a couple of years later. It was October 2002, a fortnight before the opening of the Children's Memorial to the victims of the fire, and it involved Dave's younger sister, Rachel, who had also headed to Australia.
I remember my mum going, three of you going to, what is it with that country? Right? So she was not happy. Did some travelling, but she decided to come back, head home via Bali, and she happened to be next to Kuta Beach on that evening.
The night bombs were detonated at Paddy's Bar and the Sari Club in Bali, killing more than 200 people.
It's only in the last couple of years I can start using a mobile again, that I don't mind carrying one around. Another thing of like 10 missed calls from overseas. Oh, well, what could it be? And so I phone home and it's my mum, and she's saying, Rachel's in Bali and there's been a bombing. Anyway, she was near Kuta Beach, and my mum's gone, I can't lose another one.
Yeah.
And I remember just getting on the internet, starting to look for flights to Bali.
Yeah.
I was going, okay, how am I going to do this? So here's an interesting sort of parallel. So they'd been out doing stuff all day. They'd planned to go out that evening, go down to Kuta Beach.
That area, yeah.
She was too tired.
And they stayed.
They went to their hostel and they stayed there. Mm. Exact same thing Julie did. When they got back from their day of touring or whatever they were doing, they decided, not too much. We're going to go to sleep.
It was 24 hours before Rachel was able to phone home. Now, that might seem like an exorbitant length of time, but given the context and everything the O'Keefe family had endured previously, You can just imagine the emotional toll that that was taking.
The phone lines were so inundated they couldn't get us. They couldn't even call home because she said she'd been trying.
Or had she been trying? But she said it took a while to realise the seriousness of it.
Yes.
Because the rock doing stuff. But when she realised, she phoned home. And I remember asking her, so what about the explosions, And she said, I heard them vaguely because they were in the distance. I thought they were fireworks. And that was part of the reason it took her a while to contact us. But it's just funny, Julie spent the day working, was tired, went to bed early and didn't wake up. Rachel, on the other hand, day out, went to bed early and, because she didn't follow through with her plans to go out, she was safe.
Your poor mum, though. The time of not knowing. I feel so sorry for your mum hearing that story.
Oh, yeah. And she kept saying to me, I can't.
Can't do this again.
Yeah, I can't lose another one.
The past 20 years haven't been easy. The Childers fire and David's father suffered a long and painful battle with bowel cancer that eventually claimed his life.
I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to bring my parents out and have them, sit down by the sea and see Julie so happy. And with new friends.
Yes.
New friends. She just finished uni. And this was sort of like her last hurrah before she went and looked for a proper job and started being sensible again. And the opportunity for my folks to see her so happy and, blue skies, blue sea, golden sand. It was great. It couldn't have worked out any better, I don't think. And she was so happy. And that's something that my mum came back to many, many times.
Yeah, she says it a lot, doesn't she? She was at her happiest.
Yes.
Yeah. That's nice.
Oh, it is. I'm so happy it turned out that way. We left on good terms, kind words, hugs all round. It was great.
And great memories. David and Dee stayed in Australia and raising a family, two kids, Adam and Ashlyn. That's Ashlyn Julie O'Keefe.
Since your kids would have loved Adam and Julie.
Yeah, she would have loved them too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Such a fun loving. And Ashlyn, actually, her baby photos, she's the spitting image of Julie. It's like having a little second Julie in the house.
Thank you once again to Dave and Dee O'Keefe for being so giving of their time and their stories about Julie and, of course, her dear friends Claire Webb and Melissa Smith. May their memory never be forgotten. And please, if you're near Childers in sunny Queensland, pop into the memorial to pay your respects to the victims of the Palace Hostel fire in June 2000. It's run by the Bundaberg Regional Council. My thanks to them for their support of this podcast. It's written and produced by me, Paul Cochran. Make sure you hit subscribe and tell your friends and family to tune in. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.